Hey, Brendan.
Hello, Alan.
We're back for
Hello,
another
guys.
Not a... Whoa, what?
Who? What? Has our signal been hijacked?
Someone's hacking into the Matrix again.
Oh, wait, no. That's just our guest.
Oh, we have a guest this week?
We do.
It's exciting.
A guest I procured.
Oh, wow. Fancy. From the fine guest market next door.
I still take credit for getting Julie on the podcast.
We can work this out.
You may be married, but I was the one who's like, hey, can you come on the podcast?
Proving once again that Brendan has the pull with the ladies. Or something.
So, Mystery Voice, please introduce thyself, or Brendan, should you do that? I don't know.
I should do it. A host. I can host things. It's a not things. I can host not things, not a thing.
Hosting is a thing.
Yes. Hosting is a thing that I do, and that's why right now I'm going to say, welcome to the podcast, Joe Muller.
Yours truly.
Yay.
Fresh off the boat, or should I say train?
Fresh. This is your stop. Your last stop. Joe is a fellow member of the collective where we procure monies for services.
Services that only I can
provide. And a location not to be disclosed.
Okay.
I prefer the term pharaoh-equinologist.
Oh, okay. That works.
I'll leave it to you to figure that one out.
So, welcome to the podcast. I know you are one of our strong listeners. Not just that you hear well, but that you listen often is what I meant by strong listener.
I'm like Daredevil.
He can bench, like, you know, 45 podcasts at once, kind of a guy.
Exactly. Well, I need it's that extra ear on my neck. Really
That's
helps
what
me
that
get
is.
That third one. Well,
I'm wondering what that
something.
Was.
So,
what
yes,
is,
please.
What is your thing, Joe? What do you bring to our podcast? What is the thing that drives you, or that you drive?
Oh no, I drive a Toyota. But besides that,
this isn't Toyota talk.
Exactly. No, this is Taco Talk, right? We're all talk about our Tacomas. No. Yes, I used to. No, let's see here. Well, aside from technology and retro gaming, I also bring to this lovely podcast anything and everything you ever wanted to know about railroading, trains, all that good stuff.
Are we talking actual locomotives or miniature
yes.
models or both?
Both. As a matter of fact, this last weekend, I was part of a local show get-together of modelers of the train variety, and I gotta say, it went pretty well.
Is there a name for train enthusiasts like there is for everything else, like coins as numismatic? And
well, like I joked earlier, pharaoh-equinologist, that is one who studies the iron horse.
Wow.
Yeah, it never quite catches on, does it? I believe the correct term would be rail fan, and the pejorative for one who is overly obsessed would be foamer.
Foamer?
Yes, you've never heard this term.
No, I guess I'm
yes,
not going to the right parties.
Yeah, well, yeah, not those kind, not foam dome kind of foamer, although that would be hilarious. I have yet to see somebody trackside with a foam dome, though. Not that I do such things. Yes. No, foamer comes from the idea that there are certain people who get so excited to see anything that train-like that they will practically foam at the mouth at the very thought or sight.
There are train nerds, and then there are train nerds.
Correct. I consider myself to be on the train nerd, not the train nerd.
More of a
side.
Trekker than a Trekkie?
Exactly.
Okay.
The more civilized of the two. But we all put our pants on one leg at a time every morning.
Except the people who don't have legs.
Although it should be we all put our overalls.
Right.
Correct. One strap at a time.
Where did your love of trains begin?
Well, I grew up a small, poor boy, born in a boxcar. No. my grandfather was very much into following both historical and model railroading. His father had worked in the San Francisco area at one point as a, I believe it was a brakeman for one of the railroads. So there's, I guess, a small bit of history, family history with railroads, but mostly he was the one who inspired it. He had sort of a model layout of sorts in the basement, and I would visit from time to time as a child and play with it. And between that and stuff under the Christmas tree, it kind of just stuck. Oh, and there were train tracks behind the school I went to for like the first 5 years or 6 years of, you know, grade school. So there was that too.
Many a coin flattened.
No, chain link fence. You know, I was one of those people who didn't go and like try to escape the school grounds. I should have known then.
You didn't try and go hobo?
No, I didn't go hobo. No hobo.
Has the train fascination crossed over into hobo fascination at all?
No, I think I'm too well kempt for being a hobo.
So the only thing I know about riding the rails is that you shouldn't jump onto a moving train unless you can. It's going too fast if you can still, or if you can't count the spokes in the wheels as they go by. Not that trains have wheels with spokes in them anymore, but
no, not for a long time. I believe they're usually solid aluminum. I mean, not aluminum, steel. Yes, no, everything's aluminum.
I think you're
transparent
your
aluminum.
Outdated.
Oh, big surprise! My information's a little too old.
On writing? No, that's not what I meant. But by the way, happy birthday, Alan.
Oh, is it his birthday?
It was my birthday yesterday.
Yesterday, I just missed it. Oh, I wasn't invited. Oh.
That's right, nobody was. That was the point.
Ah, well, now I don't feel as bad.
So, for trains, is it any specific kind? Diesel, coal, electric? Doesn't matter.
It doesn't really matter. I mean, I guess you could say I follow things that tend to have been around, either in the past or, you know, location wise nearby. So I don't really care as much about things far away, but it's still interesting to me. And there's certainly a lot of culture and technology that you can pretty much go forever. You know, how deep do you want to go is the question, and where.
Do you have any thoughts on the new developments with maglev?
Maglev. Yeah.
Does that still count as train?
No.
Is that something a train enthusiast would consider still a train?
I'm of the school that it's not really a train anymore. Kind of like I draw the line at monorails. I'm kind of like train racist.
So monorails are or aren't?
It depends. There's qualifiers there. I would consider it in some ways a train and in some ways more like a tram or something. they really go like on, you know, like those little trams that take you around like giant parking lots. Like those, except high up in the sky, really expensive, and they make very strange sounds, which kind of makes me frightened of them.
Oh, so that's interesting, because those are still diesel, as far as I know, or gas-powered anyway, at least the one in Disneyland is, but
Really? I thought that, no, that's electrical, my friend.
No, I will put money that that is gas.
No, my friend, you are wrong.
The only electrical. Are we actually having this discussion right
Yes, you are. Believe me, several hundred volts DC. I know this.
now?
One, because I actually read the labels on the rails. Heyo.
Gentlemen, gentlemen, please.
Please, I'm an expert. Do not argue with the expert. Just nod your head
It's
politely.
like the eastern portion of the Transcontinental Railroad meeting the western portion of the Transcontinental Railroad. Let me be that golden spike and say, discord is not a thing.
Yes. No, I think yeah, you're probably thinking of the little kiddie ride that's driven by the lawnmower engine, right? Just goes and kind of putters along.
Not sure what you're referring to, but that's okay. I was just
Going
so
onward.
yeah, right, exactly. Moving. So you're more of a by rail kind of train enthusiast, I guess.
I'm bi curious, if you will. Yes,
Crazy.
two rails
Better
I
than
would
one.
say yes, exactly. Yes, two rails are better than one. And then there's the crazy people who have three.
Who, what, is there actually a three-rail train?
Yeah, haven't you ever heard about don't piss on the third rail?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's a thing to not.
Or back
So
when they made them narrower.
that's not
Yeah.
really a I mean the third rail, it's not riding on that rail. It's using that for power.
Sometimes.
Well, it's using it for power. I wouldn't say it's putting any pressure on it. But that's so are you saying BART is not a train that you'd be excited about? Light rail?
I wouldn't be excited about it, but that's because BART generally isn't exciting. It's more of like a refrigerator on a track.
We're learning so much about the
It's
train
not, I don't
hierarchy.
consider BART sexy, let's put it that way.
Well, its name
Doesn't,
is Bart.
yeah. That's kind of the first turn off. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm just narrowing the field down for what exactly we're looking at. So, okay.
Yeah.
So for I mean, when let's see, I had some model trains growing up, and these were all, I guess, these were all the kind that you, I guess, it sends the current on the rails themselves to power the cars. So I never had like anything too fancy, but it was the kind of thing where, you know, if the rail were at all disconnected, you would not get a circuit, and then the train would not work. But are you? Do you have, is it, I mean,
I
what are
come
those?
from the future where trains no longer need rails.
So we're back to maglevs? Is that okay again? I'm not fully understanding where that
No,
comes
no, no.
from.
No, I was doing a very horrible riff of Back to the Future, but beside that point, no. Well, yes, that would be what most model trains have been doing forever, is just kind of like, oh, here we go. We put like positive on one side and negative on the other, and oh, the wheels go and connect up, and there's a motor and it moves. I mean, that's cool and all, but we have the technology to do better. So, through many, many years and up to recently, now there's the fun thing of command control, where you basically end up putting the equivalent of a little tiny computer in the train, and then there's like a digital signal that's injected down the track that it listens for and then responds to. So you can do crazy things like, if it has sound, tell it when to do the bell or turn lights on or off or whatever. So,
What?
or go opposite directions or, all sorts of cool things, I guess. I don't know. It's kind of like networking over rails.
Are you aware of any model train technology that involves actual coal that you would have to fuel the train with coal?
Well, maybe cold dust. There are some guys who are crazy enough to do what's called live steam or live diesel, where they will do something akin to the old like glow fuel in RC cars and planes, where they'll have some sort of fuel that burns and creates heat or is run through some sort of, you know, actual engine and works as like a scale representation of the real thing. And then you have the guys who are usually rich enough that they can go and like get ones that are fairly large, like maybe only 10 or 20 times smaller than the real thing, that do that. So yes, it's a thing.
Right, so like in the kinds of setups you'd see inside of a building, you're probably using mostly like electrically driven stuff, but anything outside, it's kind of, it could be possibly an actual engine.
Sure, yeah, it's possible. I would think you would probably want to do it in a ventilated area. Unless it runs on, you know, like children's tears, then probably be fine.
So do you have a, what's the biggest kind of scale that you've run a train?
What, personally?
Sure.
Yes.
I mean, that's what we're talking about, right?
Professionally. As an amateur.
Have you run a
train professionally? Well, there was that one time back in NOM.
Have you run a train professionally?
No.
Okay.
Someday, though, there's actually a couple local museums that you pay like a couple $100 and they basically give you like half hour up in the cab of a real thing and basically let you drive it, which is a thing, and it's pretty cool. But
I would do that.
Yeah, of course you would.
I would love to run a train someday.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't that why we all became engineers?
Right. Exactly. Well, they told me it was engineering, and then it was like, oh, that engineering, that's no fun. Can I put a whistle at my desk or something?
I was more inspired by Star Trek than trains.
Yes. Well, we all were inspired by Star Trek. Funny enough, don't think there are many trains, if any, in Star Trek. I don't know why.
There's got to be some sort of holodeck train episode.
There's gotta be.
So they had a lot of wild, like, I don't know, Fistful of Data's or some other sort of wild left episode.
I was about to say, it would have to involve Data somehow.
Yeah, they never did an Orient Express kind of thing. That would have been an easy play, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, that would have been great.
Have to ask them that next, panel, right? Why didn't you do an Orient Express episode? It would have been wonderful.
There's got to be close to 1,000 episodes of Star Trek, and they never did an Orient Express one.
Well, I didn't watch any of Voyager, so it could be in that. Like,
oh, you did yourself a favor.
Is it that bad?
It's not that great.
Voyager is with Janeway, right?
Yes.
Okay. Trying not to go too far off the sidetrack here.
This was a pullout, or whatever those things are called.
Siding,
I believe. Siding, there we go.
Come on, guys. Come on.
Come on, get
the expert
times.
Now. Come on. Okay, anyway, personally,
I know nothing.
Like, what was the, like, how...
Okay, yes, yes. Yeah. So, largest size I've ever operated in the model realm would be... G scale, the size, you'll usually see them, they're German, is the LGB or Lehmann Gross Bahn, Lehmann's Big Trains from Germany. Those are, yes, I know, that's literally what it, yeah, LGB. Now I think they're just Lehmann or whatever, Lehman, I think. Anyway, those are like the ones you see in window displays that are, you know, kind of big and chunky, and usually they put like stuffed animals and stuff in the back of them. I don't know, it's kind of humiliating sometimes, but what are you gonna do?
Are you particular about the cargo that goes on your train?
I don't think so. There's no hierarchy, you know, no hierarchy, no no leeway.
So you're okay.
So with people in the modern world don't pretend to pull, you know, nuclear materials or any sort of high danger.
Yeah, I don't think that anybody's done. Well, no, actually, that's an interesting little tidbit. Here's your $5 moment here, right, in the podcast.
It's
$5. I know. That's how much your time is really worth. Yes. Back in the day, there's an article, I think, in Scientific American from back in, like, the 50s or 60s. That they were using the old Lionel metal, you know, trains, toy trains, in a nuclear testing facility to transport test materials back and forth. Yes.
No, it's the safety levels of the 50s and 60s.
So, yes, choo-choo, here comes the sample you wanted.
And that's why we have OSHA.
OSHA are train haters. How dare they? It was electrically sound. So what if it wasn't shielded? Yes. So that was a thing.
Okay, but then the majority of your train experience, are there like formal, there must be formal sizes for model trains?
Yes. Well, there are standardized sizes or gauges. Scales actually would be the more technical thing, because gauge is usually the width between the rails, whereas scale is what you're scaling in relation to the full-size prototype, if you will.
Are there actual train conventions?
Oh, yes.
Are they noisy?
They're usually smelly. You might be able to, I would say...
From the trains or the participants?
A little of both. I have never been to the big conventions, but think of something on the level of Comic-Con that had... There's a few of them. One usually goes on in Chicago, I think it is, yearly. And, yeah, lots of people who apparently never occurred of showers for a week, sweating in the building. Good times.
Oh, that sounds like not a thing.
thing I want.
Yeah. If someone was interested in getting started in train modeling, is there any suggestions you might have?
Just don't start with like a little toy thing, because you'll just be disappointed. But I mean, just go online and chances are you will find somebody that's doing something interesting, and then kind of check out what they did, see if you like it. If not, well, you know, keep looking around, and if not, then maybe it wasn't a thing for you.
Are there train enthusiast websites that you can recommend, or magazines?
We can cross promote a podcast, if I may.
Sure.
Sure.
It's not one I'm on, but there is one known as the Model Railcast. And that one is pretty good. I don't know if they've updated a bunch. They have a good backlog of episodes, though, and they're usually pretty good about introducing topics or interviews with people and what they've done, including covering major events, that kind of thing. The other place that's really handy is there's an online magazine called Model Railroad Hobbyist that publishes monthly for free, and they do a really good job at basically the same thing, but in print form. So those are kind of where I suggest people go and check out if they're interested. We don't buy it.
Mostly, it sounds like, just from what we've been talking about, it's been mostly kind of coal-based trains, or do you...
Oh, no.
Okay.
No, I mean, there's... There's a bit of, what would I say, maybe a romanticism in especially the Americas of steam and the classic, you know, fire-fueled steam locomotive rolling into the station and ringing its bell and departing with lonesome cry of a whistle, or shrill cry, depending on where you're at. But I mean, that to me always, you know, that brings out the inner child, I would say. There's just something kind of magical about sort of this fire-breathing, smoke-belching, you know, behemoth that somehow is able to be, you know, controlled by us mere mortals. It's otherworldly.
It's like a machine dragon.
Exactly.
On rails.
Yeah, or the Iron Horse, as they said, or many other names, I'm sure. But yeah, I mean, that's, I think, where ultimately, you know, it puts a grin on my face. But I mean, you know, I'm a fan of the modern stuff too. You know, it's kind of similar to guys and gals who are into, say, truck pulls or doing, you know, following any sort of large industry, anything like that, or just fast cars, you know, really souped up trucks, whatever it may be. Now, there's kind of something along the whole spectrum from big, giant, holy crap, 200-plus ton, you know, machines to something that's only like a ton and goes and runs on a couple of wooden rails in the ground. So there's all types, all sizes.
Is a train modeling, is that an expensive hobby to get into, or is it pretty manageable?
It can be, in the fact that if there's a market for something, somebody will find a way to make an expensive product to serve that market. But it can be done on the cheap. I'd say it's no more expensive than any other similar hobby like that. It just depends on how technical you want to go, how detailed you want to go. But, you know, starting in the hobby, we're looking at, I don't know, probably $100 or so to get yourself some, you know, equipment or whatever that you're interested in. It all depends on what you're modeling, what size you're doing. Generally, the larger trains cost more, but there's kind of this weird bell curve kind of expense scale where suddenly it gets small enough and it becomes really expensive again. So, yes, starting in the hobby, I generally would recommend people go and start where I started most of mine, which was in what's known as HO scale, which is 1 to the 87th. It ends up, the units end up being about, or like the cars and engines, maybe no more than like an inch wide by like a foot long at the most. So it's a manageable size. You don't like look at it the wrong way and things fall off of it. But, you know, it just depends on your circumstances, what you can fit.
Is there any sort of judgment among train enthusiasts who, like, based on the size of your cars? Or, like, the number of cars in your train?
What is that meter stick, right? What is the...
exactly. Yeah, what's the... Well, you know, it's not necessarily the length, it's the girth, too, right? No. nobody heard me say that.
It's the gauge, not the...
It's the gauge, that's right. Yes. It's the gauge, not the length. Yes. Tunnels, what now? So, yes, there are some groups of people, I guess, in the modeling hobby who try to go and, you know, get whatever the most expensive thing is or try to run the longest thing. But deep down, we all know they're just showing off, and it gets kind of boring after a while.
I mean, I'd imagine the thing that's more interesting would be designing kind of the tracks and everything that goes around the train.
Oh yes. Yeah. There's certainly people who are very skilled at that, either at replicating or compressing down, or doing what they call selective compression, where you go and kind of leave out intermediate boring parts and kind of go and just put the vital pieces that you need in. Like if you were modeling something like Grand Central Station in New York, you know, you would not go and model the whole thing. You would only model like key aspects and kind of like not have the hundreds of feet of nothing.
Sure, kind of a greatest hits almost.
Exactly.
Like those pictures where they show all the landmarks of San Francisco in one shot, even though there's no possible way you could see all of those things at once. That kind of thing.
Unless it was from space.
Well, yes.
I had to throw that qualifier.
I would hope that there are like hipster train enthusiasts who only display parts that aren't recognizable. Like not the major landmarks around a city or whatever scene they're trying to set.
Oh yeah,
they'll that was a really you know, so, part of the rail, you probably never heard of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this was the siding that was behind Walgreens 50 years ago. I modeled it down to every last weed in the photo. You can see it right here.
I only model the cows.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but as they say, everyone needs a hobby.
So how much space?
And trains is yours.
Yeah, how much physical space yes. is like your biggest layout take?
Well, that depends. I'm in a group that does a modular setup, so everybody owns like a small piece of it, and they all join together in sort of Voltron-esque methods, although not as exciting, I guess. I don't know. Depends. Formed to be one giant layout, and the one that we just had was the outside of it altogether was about 20 by 16 feet, but I have participated in one form or another in setups as large as about, I think it was 40 by 60 feet or 40 by 8 feet. But, you know, it's... Whoa. So that's, of course, just around the outside. There may be stuff in the inside, too, or it may kind of go in back over itself or whatever. So you could end up with a lot more. But generally speaking, you're looking at like 100 real feet of length track, usually on the average, I guess, show layout or something like that. Home layouts, it's as big as you plan it to be. Some people just have a little shelf that's only like 3 or 4 feet. They pack it full in such a way that there are whole puzzles that you can basically do that involve like taking, you know, a car of grain and a car of boxes or whatever and like arranging them so that they're spotted a certain way or dropped off in a minimum number of moves or that kind of thing. So there's kind of a whole almost math nerdy way you can get into these things too.
So when a train leaving the left side of the auditorium at 3 o'clock.
Ooh, I love these ones.
I have an odd question which you may know the answer to. Do trains ever bank on turns?
Bank. Yes, as in tilting.
Yeah.
Some tracks are actually designed, you'll see this on freeways too, they do what's called super elevation, where one side is slightly higher than the other, and that's to go, and just like a racetrack, you have it in such a way that if you're always going at a high rate of speed over that, you naturally tend to go and tilt the opposite way so that things don't tend to try to want to tilt over. But there's a whole level of design doing that. But there are actual, a lot of the bullet trains, the newer ones especially, have like pneumatics in them that allow a whole car or a locomotive to tilt with the curve. So, yes, trains do tilt, but of course, if they were not designed to and they tilt too much, then they fall over on their side. And
then they become that sweet 1920 stock footage of trains falling over.
Exactly. Yeah, oddly enough, there's a lot of footage of train-like things crashing into each other. They actually would do that a lot of the time with old equipment way back in the bad old days. They would go and do what's known in the industry as a cornfield meet, or, i.e. a unplanned meeting of two trains going toward each other. So, yeah, they would then, of course, have the guys jump out, several hundred feet or whatever, and then run behind whatever they could and film the ensuing destruction.
Battle trains.
Battle trains, yes. Yes, train jousting.
If we can have storage wars, there should be battle trains.
Yeah. Well, they have mounted, huge howitzers on trains in order to deal with recoil and stuff. That was like, the Germans did that during World War I, even.
They did, yes. This is true.
Although,
but I don't know if they used those howitzers to fight each other, like fight another train. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, I don't think that happened.
Instead of a cattle catcher, they have a car catcher. Or they can take out the other train car.
A train catcher. Yes.
You should pitch that to your train friends.
Yeah, there we go.
See what they think. Hey, we can spend all this time building this elaborate model, and then we should fight with our trains. I know you've spent hundreds of hours laboriously, meticulously, getting every detail right, and then we should just smash them in a fiery blaze and give them a Viking funeral.
A Viking funeral?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, clearly the Vikings had a very extensive rail system throughout Scandinavia very early on. It was, Ike the Engineer. Thor the Conductor.
Little dragons on the very front of the
actually,
train.
That's kind of funny. Thor the Conductor. Get it? Thor, lightning, conductor.
We got it.
Okay.
They say that the pillaging was always very precise.
Wow.
The trains were always on time for pillaging.
Maybe not of the rail variety. Somehow a Viking train doesn't sound like something friendly.
No. But it does sound like something that should be a thing.
UrbanDictionary.com, Viking train. Oh my. It has something to do with Minnesota.
Right. Well, I think we've got some stories that Alan has accumulated today.
I had a couple questions, actually. Outside of train lore, you mentioned retro gaming, and I wanted to dive into that if you didn't mind.
Well, if it doesn't involve trains, I don't want anything to do with it. No, please. This is my second favorite subject. My first console was an Atari back when everybody had like Super Nintendos, so I kind of started early with retro gaming before it was more
retro. You're a retro early adopter?
Yeah, I'm like a hipster gamer, I guess.
Well, I like to think that I was playing retro games before they were called retro games.
Yeah.
They were just games.
They were just games.
So Atari 2600, I'm guessing?
Yeah, 2600.
Oh, I got you beat. I was a 400 guy, but that's okay. We can keep going.
No, the 2600 came before that, my friend.
Oh,
the 2600 was a computer, which I didn't even know about until a couple of years ago. I was like, Atari made computers? Oh, interesting. Fascinating, Captain.
Well, what was there on the 2600 for you?
2600 back in the day, that was like playing Centipede and Tank and Warlords. Oh gosh, what other games? Demon Attack. That was the game. That was awesome. Going and your little dude at the bottom shooting at these big flying monsters. They're raining down fire on you. It was pretty epic.
Because I remember the, let's see, Atari. So that was, were you a joystick guy or a paddles guy?
It depended. I mean, you know, obviously the most games either did one or the other, but, you know, some paddle games were pretty good. I mean, you have Warlords, if you got enough people around, that was basically like giant, well, what would you call it? It's kind of a variant of air hockey, almost, where you have like a castle in the corner and you have to go and deflect this fireball that's flying around and try to knock the other person's castle walls down.
I think literally all of the games that were based on the paddle were...
Paddle had something bouncing around,
they,
yes.
They were all a variant of air hockey. I mean...
there was one game called Kaboom. I never got to play it back in the day, but you're like this... There's a like a... escaped prisoner, you know, like old Keystone Cop style at the top of the screen, and he's dropping down bombs and you have these buckets that you have to go and catch them in. So he like kind of goes back and forth real fast and you have to catch all the bombs. So there were certainly games that used the paddle that weren't a little dot bouncing around.
Yeah, I just remember there was a there was a game that was supposed to be like the, I want to say it was Olympics themed or.
Oh, yes. Video Olympics.
As barely as
remember
you could
that.
Theme a, you know, an 8-bit game or even fewer
yeah.
than that for the Olympics. And almost all of the games were just a variant on Pong. So,
yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That was a, everybody pretty much knew back then that was Atari. Warner, I think, owned Atari at that point. A large share of it, and they were just cashing in on like, oh, we can sell it as Video Olympics. They didn't put much effort into it. There were much better things later.
Yeah, I was always much more of a joystick guy, although only because there was just something really, I'm sure it's phallic about it, that resonates with a young male, so...
I don't know, the trackball was rather fun for me for those few games that did it, Centipede. Although I don't think it like officially supported the trackball, but it certainly seemed like it did. It worked. I don't know if it actually made any difference.
Were there home trackballs?
Yeah. Atari made one, and then I had one that was like some third party, but I mean, you know, it was like, it was maybe the size of a large gumball, kind of like the actual ball in it, but you know, it was pretty awesome to be able to go, and then you just get, like, a good spin on it to go and, like, fly over to one corner or the other.
Yeah, I think
there's just something kind of relaxing and yet horribly frantic about playing a game that has a trackball.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's that, it's exactly what you said, where the amount of control is kind of, it seems like it's fine, or you could just throw it down.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Is it a
and then, yeah.
Kind of like what?
It's like button mashing, but with a rollerball.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, it's like the guys who go and spin, you know, spin the players and foosball, myself included, like just go and it's like, how fast can I go and just totally get it to spin as many times as possible, as fast as possible to go and just totally screw over the other person.
Yeah. The, what game? So moving, maybe, I don't know if this game ever came out for the 2600, but I know, it was in arcades, and this is one of my favorite, or my wife's favorite arcade games was Rampart, if you ever played that.
Oh, yeah, I played that more recently on a like multi-arcade thing. I played it there, and then I also played a few variants of it. Evil's, oh my god, ROMs and emulation and things on computers. So
there's anything that should be a thing, it's arcade emulators. I love them.
Yes. Well, yes. My uncle he is affectionately referred to as Bad Uncle. He calls himself that. Got me hooked on MAME, which is the multi-arcade machine emulator back in early 2000s. That introduced me to such classics as Joust and Dig Dug and, you know, moving onward to more modern things, but lots of cool games. And then you have, like, the old Vector games that are all lines, Tempest and Space Duel. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think the games that you can't so easily replicate with, like, a, you know, I mean, it wasn't just buttons. It was the controller
kind of
built in.
Tapper had that.
Tapper. I think, though...
Had the beer tap.
Right. I think, though, Star Wars.
Yeah.
Pretty much, you can't, unless, without building something yourself or buying one of the original machines, I don't know how you can replicate that.
Yeah.
Wait, you're talking about the one with the Death Star Trench Run?
Yeah, with the two handles.
And,
you know, you tilt it up and down, and it
showed, I still got to play one of those.
It showed the, you know, the guns from the X-Wing in the corners.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And the TIE fighters would inexplicably shoot these kind of flashing stars that you could shoot down.
Yes.
That may have been a little out of canon, but otherwise...
Out of canon.
Thank you.
Yes.
I probably put...
That was very impressive back in the day.
Many a quarter into those machines.
Yeah. But to answer your question, yes, I'm familiar with Rampart, and it is an awesome... You know, like tower defense before tower defense.
Right.
Very, very cool game. So for our listeners out there, Rampart is a trackball controlled game most of the time. Sometimes joystick, but real menu is trackballs. Anyway.
I think you could make a case either way.
Yes. Yes. There's these ships or. Invading armies that are coming in, and you have to build like a wall around your forts and protect it. And each round, there's like a building round. Well, I'll let you explain it.
Right, surround castle to stay alive.
Exactly. Yes, this is back from the
Bane is in that game?
Essentially, yes. Yes.
Yes, it's... back from Gauntlet days where it's like Red Wizard needs food badly. Yeah.
It's pretty impressive, the what they would have to do to make it sound like someone talking.
Yeah. Well, there were limits back then, but a lot of old pinball machines used the same chips too. So you would get kind of this garbly sort of, it sounded mostly intelligible on the voice, but you would get Sinistar was a famous game back in the day that had speaking, you know, that was the run coward, big giant screaming space alien thing. That made the game. It was hard as nails, but it was just so satisfying to hear this. But yes. Oh, you may lose me here in a second. The internet here has the lovely habit of going out when somebody is using a microwave.
Well, you know, when we're troubleshooting, that's something we bring up. Is there a microwave near your modem? Maybe it shouldn't be there. What, you put your modem on top of the microwave?
With the microwave? Where else would I put it?
It's electronics. They go together.
Yeah, exactly.
It only works when it's on defrost.
That's what happens when ice gets on the telephone lines, right? You set your modem to defrost.
I feel like I missed out on all these. Well, I mean, now they're retro games, but yeah. I wasn't really allowed to play many video games as a child.
Well, neither was I.
All these games that you two are talking about, I have no idea, except Star Wars, because there was a pizzeria nearby that had a
that console. That was your shining beacon of hope.
Oh yeah, that was the best.
It kind of transcend the experience, I would think.
I mean, I was already on board because it was Star Wars.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Star Wars was everything in my childhood, but like...
There were a lot of good Star Wars games. One of not so great ones, but most of them were good, you know, at any time. Any time is a good time for Star Wars.
That's what Disney wants you to think anyway.
That's right. Disney owns Star Wars now.
Movies every year for the next every year.
Well, you know, just think of them as like the Extended Universe books. They just keep coming out.
Well, I hope they're better than the quality of most of the Extended Universe books.
What? How many of come on, we need to know your literary chops here of how to turn the phrase, and he withdrew his lightsaber in as many words as possible and is really make the reader feel as though they were there.
The one really good bit of the Extended Universe they're not going to adapt into a movie. So,
well, that's fan fiction.
Oh boy, all right. Before we go off on that fan fiction tangent, I wanted to see if there was anything you wanted to promote or otherwise bring up. We're coming up to an hour here on the old Ye Olde podcast.
Oh boy, well, we'd best get going then. One thing that's still going on that's kind of cool, there's still another week of it. One of the original guys behind Mega Man was doing a Kickstarter. I don't know if you guys have seen this. It's called Mighty Number 9.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I believe the guy's name is Kenji Inafune, I think is his name. Inafune? I can't remember how you pronounce it. But he was one of the main character designers for the first Mega Man game, and than the ones afterwards. So he left Capcom recently, basically out of disagreement, and also because they kept canceling Mega Man games. And he decided to kind of start over from scratch and do sort of a spiritual successor kind of series. And he got a lot of really talented people in the industry to come together and kind of put together this concept for a new game called Mighty Number 9 that is a lot like Mega Man, but has a lot of kind of new ideas and is all nice and shiny and HD. And they managed to raise $1 million in less than a week for this. And it's still going. They're doing, you know, Kickstarter always has stretch goals. There, it's like, oh, we'll add more levels if you guys keep putting more money in. But, you know, check it out just for the fact that you can usually get like a good deal on these games if you support them up front. And at the very least, check it out. It's almost kind of like the pitch video is very moving. I don't know who exactly did it, but like it was pulling at my heartstrings. It's like, wow.
So it's like Mega Man, but with enough differences not to get sued.
Correct.
The Mega Man sound alike.
Mighty yes. Man.
Pretty much. Well, I guess he like morphs like his weapons instead of like just firing random things. So like he can change form and that kind of thing, or like take on the powers of just regular enemies in addition to bosses and stuff like that.
Cool. Yeah.
They also had some really cool like making of videos with it, including the person who I didn't even know this. The person who composed the Mega Man music was a chick, man. That's actually pretty cool. That's definitely a thing. Here. Female composers in video games are definitely a thing, and that's awesome. You know, breaking down barriers there, and plus, I mean,
with plasma
I gotta
cans.
Say, yeah, exactly, breaking the glass ceiling with a plasma can.
Cool.
Yes. So, glass ceiling man.
Glass ceiling.
Oh, no. Not a thing. No.
Not a thing.
No. That sounds like he's defending it. That's not a hero. Hero. That's not the person we want to be supporting.
No. Well, he's a boss character. He's an enemy. Oh, Dr. Okay. Wily hates, you know, women composers. I guess. There's
probably something in there. Sure. I'm going to go
yeah,
with that.
We're going to go with that. Yeah,
to defeat that boss, you get two checks in front of you. One of them has a man's name, one has a woman's name. And you have to write the same amount on both checks to defeat Glass Ceiling Man.
Yes.
It's actually a pretty easy level, so. That's more of a tutorial.
The game designers wanted an ethical dilemma.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure there is a game like that.
Cool.
Corporate RPGs, thing of the future.
Yes. Your check was eaten by a Gru.
Well, thank you for coming on, Joe. I think we learned a lot about trains and retro gaming.
Is there a place on the internet that people can find you, or maybe you don't want to be found? I'm not sure.
Google my name. You'll end up with like a bunch of lawyers and other unsavory people who are not me.
Are you a Twitter person, or
no, I have not twat.
Tweeted is the phrase.
Yeah. I think that glass ceiling just came back in.
No, it's with a softer A.
Okay. All right. We'll
yes.
Go with that.
Yes.
Any sort of blog?
No, I don't. Anything? No, not really. I'm kind of. I have Facebook, but that's just friends.
That's private.
Yeah.
I mean, except to Mark Zuckerberg and the NSA. And... but otherwise, it's private.
The government is my friend.
Right.
They would never do anything
to
harm me.
They're always liking my posts.
Exactly. That's how they... they didn't need to capture all that data. They just needed to become my friend. The NSA are Facebook stalkers.
Maybe that's where all those random people who send you friend requests are. They're actually NSA sleepers.
NSA sleepers, yeah.
They're trying to infiltrate your circle of friends.
Hmm.
Catfish.
That could be.
Government-sponsored catfishing. That's some serious terrorism.
Yeah. Well, they can never take away our right to not be catfished.
Yes.
Is it mud fishing or something where you catch catfish with your bare hands?
That's hillbilly hand fishing.
There we go.
All right, and on that note, I'm ending the podcast. We're not getting into hillbilly hand fishing.
That should be the title.
Not hillbilly hand fishing, the podcast.
Joe, well, thank you for coming on. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Brandon. You go ahead.
Thank you for coming on, Joe.
You're quite welcome, Brendan.
Right on.
Maybe Brendan. I'll have to come back again sometime.
Yes, that would be great. I would enjoy it. Brendan, I will talk to you next week.
Next week, until next time.
Sounds good. Bye-bye.
Bye.